a look at the old cells, and I told you at the beginning of the cell is surrounded by this lipid bilayer called plasma membrane. You can hear the cell membrane, plasma membrane, it's the same thing. And we're going to take a look at first the component of this plasma membrane. And the first component is lipid bilayer. And second one is proteins and additional stuffs. And here is lipid bilayer. And lipid, you know, we're going to take a look at it a little more in detail, but it has hydrophilic head plus two hydrophobic legs. This is carbon, non-carbon chain. And these hydrophobic tails of one side or the other facing each other, and whether this hydrophilic head facing outside or cytoplasm. So he works as a barrier. Something goes, something don't. These gases are CO2, of course, oxygen, nitrogen also can go through it freely, and even nitric oxide, which found as one of these signal transduction molecule, and subsequently somebody here got the Nobel Prize in medical school, can go through here. Ethanol can go through here. That's how you absorb the ethanol in the stomach. Your ethanol, quote unquote, wine or beer ethanol coming through this way. And here, the water. Surprisingly, we found also depending on cell to cell, but the water can go through this more than what we thought. Whereas the bigger molecules or charged molecules, ions, or bigger molecules like this cannot pass through this membrane. So it works as a barrier and separates inside outside the cell. And going here, this barrier makes this electrochemical gradient, I told you at the beginning, a sodium versus potassium gradient. There are a lot of sodium in outside, not much in inside. When there's a lot of potassium in inside, not much in outside cell. There are a lot of calciums, minimal level of calciums, and calcium ion concentration is about 1 millimolar equivalent in your tissue fluid or blood vessel. This calcium concentration is very tightly regulated by your system on kidneys and such. Inside, there are some calciums inside, total calciums if you measure it. But ionic calcium in the cytoplasm is very low. Below 10 to the minus 7th molar. And chloride, there are a lot of chlorides outside, but it's not much inside. It's compensated by proteins. Proteins are roughly say negatively charged. So that's a counter ion for this. And the phosphates are a lot in inside as well. And many people surprisingly didn't know, but there are very few amount of ATP outside your tissue cells, in blood and tissue fluid. Very little amount. Whereas you have our cells try to maintain 1 millimolar or a little less amount of ATP all the time. ATP or similar molecule, GTP, actually is used as a signal even in your body. When you suffer with muscle injury, and means that the muscle breaking down cells, and ATP is leaking out. That is used as a signal for the rest of your body, including brain, that you have injuries. Sometimes too much ATP, and you go undergo shock, and you die. So this barrier is very important. here again the same kind of pictures. So two major components of lipid, phospholipid, and two other varieties, and many, many proteins. And one of the important issues on the membrane protein is proteins are glycosylated. Many, if not all these, at least when they synthesize, proteins are glycosylated. Glycosylated means these poly chain of the sugars, hexose, attached to the protein, one of the amino acids. Also, some proteins are anchored by your lipid, even. That we're going to take a look at quickly later on. But first is a major, major component of phospholipid. Phospholipid is roughly shaped like this. It's polar head, means charge, the phosphate, and different one. This is, in this case, is a phosphatidyl ethanol cone. And then these are two molecules here, phosphate, namely, is attached to the glycerol to these fatty acid tail. Fatty acid tail is actually a long chain, carbon chain. And mostly these are single bonds, such what we call saturated. And sometimes you see double bonds. Double bonds making this kink of this tail. So I'm going to use this diagram from now on. It was a general lipid. Here's the head and facing outside and the tails. Since it's the 1950s, 60s, the famous fluidic mosaic model of the lipid membranes. And we know that the lipid can move freely this way, lateral or fractions in these tails or rotations of this individual lipid. Occasionally, flip-flop of the lipid takes place from this side to the other side. But in life, in the cells, they use enzymes to do this, flip-flops. So it's not common. And interesting here is a kink. If you have a kink, you can see that the space in between two heads are sparser than lipid with a kink. Details and kinks. It's more packed. And these kinks and these spaces makes easier for this lipid to move around more. So some organisms, at least yeast or bacteria, adapt to this and they're making these double bonds configuration. So they adjust the membrane fluidity based on this. This may be a useful feature for engineering purposes.
Well, you might think of these materials now as a wax and an oil.
Right.
Is it always the case that the kink chain is on the second carbon in the glycerol?
Sometimes in some bacteria they have both kinks.
Both.
Yeah. I've seen it, but it's not common that case.
Oh, yeah. The average is one kink per molecule, but you can have 1 to 6 double bonds.
Right.
Okay.
So you have more.
The average will be sterile oleophosphatidyl choline, right, which is a C18 saturated C18 one double bond. But in all these, like the red cell membrane, you would have a range of these materials. But like, the key is that all these plasma membranes are fluid. We rarely, if any time, see a wax membrane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even penguins' feet are made with lipids with more little bones to keep them liquid on the ice.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
So these are major four phospholipid constituents on the mammalian plasma membrane. And actually, there are a lot of variety of this phospholipid, and many, many minor phospholipids. And many of them, I believe, I'm not a lipid biochemist, but there are many of them we just don't understand yet how much and why they're there.
Well, they're structural as well as signal molecules.
Right, signals, yes. And but the important molecules of phospholipid-ethylcholine and phosphatidylserine and phospholipid-choline. And one important thing here is the charge on the head here. And the second type is called sphingomyelin. And he's a little bit different way of attaching here in comparison to the others. Here you see both are CO, here the doesn't have the CO connections here. And the other important issue is this phosphatidylserine. It has extra charge, negative charge. The other has one each of the positive and negative charge on the forehead, so it we say it's neutral. Whereas phosphatidylserine has one extra carbonyl residue, so it has negative charge. And that comes to the reason why I tell you in a few slides. And the other component unique to, most unique to plasma membrane is cholesterol. Cholesterol is smaller molecule like this, and going right around below the head of the other phospholipid, and they can extend the tail into this fatty acid chain. And cholesterol, amount of cholesterol you have, and you stabilize this membrane means your fluidity is decreased or such. And that's why one of the reasons too much cholesterol and your cell become less flexible. One of the reasons why.
But not enough and it becomes weak.
But right, that's right. And the cholesterol is essential, and you need it.
What's the fraction of cholesterol in there?
I have pictures here. Here's the cholesterol, and depending on this plasma membrane, from myelin to red blood cells to liver, it's about, well, this is sort of percentage numbers, and we get 15 to 20 some percent average is cholesterol.
It's about 40 mole percent per lipid. It's about 40 mole percent.
40. Yeah.
Because a lot of the membrane is obviously protein. So if
half
the membrane is protein, the rest of the lipid has a 40 mole percent ratio with cholesterol, with lipid and cholesterol. Mm-hmm.
It's a specialist thing. Other membranes, even the organelle membranes has less cholesterol. And for bacteria, zero cholesterol.
So is this the LDL or the HDL? This is the HDL. Did you drop?
This is cholesterol.
Cholesterol.
Yeah.
Yeah, these
are all.
It's a little different. Yeah. LDL cholesterol and HDL.
It's like a carrier.
Oh, it's the carrier.
It's the carrier.
Okay.
Cholesterol is just cholesterol.
And also unique in plasma membrane is called glycolipid. Instead of this phosphate attached to a choline or something, you have long chain sugars attached to glycerol or sphingomyelin kind of pictures. And this is unique. Cholesterol you can find both halves of plasma membrane. Glycolipid you find only exterior of the plasma membrane, outside, sitting outside. So this you can use this for specific attachment of some sort. So having this, all these phosphatidylserine, PS, that I told you, negative charge, is now, you see, almost exclusively cytosolic site or interior of the plasma membrane. So plasma membrane, one of the reasons plasma membrane, major, this is the major reason plasma membrane has negative charge inside due to this possible sealing. When on the outside, you have, depending on the cells, but there is some other stream of iron outside. So it's glycolipids. So even given these two halves of lipid bilayer in the plasma membrane, nature is very different. And even more now, recent days, we found in a specific region of the plasma membrane, what we call lipid graft, is a localized area, and somehow this area mobility is decreased, and the membrane proteins are pretty much contained inside here with specific matters. We don't understand 100% of this nature yet, but some receptors and some transporters are trapped like this inside, so it does not go into the, any other area of the plasma membrane. I'm not a membrane biologist, but so far I believe that we don't know how it's made and maintained like this. But it found long ago, even 20 years ago, in electron micrograph, there are some special staining on the plasma membrane particular area. And people wondered why, but now we understand some of that. Yes.
Yeah, one general way to think of what we're talking about here is that this is a two-dimensional solution. And there's a solvent, which is the main lipid, and then there are solutes. And almost depending on what the relative concentrations are, everything is a solute or a solvent or something.
Yeah.
And so think of it as a 2D solution. With water on either side as well, that's the other component.
Okay, so that's pretty much I wanted to tell you about this lipid organizations. Plasma membrane, yes.
A question, are these RAFs, this sort of condensed region caused by electrical sort of charge effects, or is it some kind of phase transition, or is it, what's it called, or is it just a packing that allows the condensation of this material then?
Just say yes.
What we know is more cholesterol and more sphingomyelin, sphingolipids are here. And appear to be, for instance, in the presynaptic membranes have some kind of issues like this. And other than that, I have no idea.
This whole thing is going to be explained on solution thermodynamics, solution kinetics, precipitation, nucleation, growth, everything in 2D.
Right. Yes.
Is there some kind of functional consequence to these RAFs?
Yes, some receptors or exocytic adapter proteins here, membrane proteins, probably anchored here. And that's why.
Have these just been found in very pure membrane?
Right.
In the biophysical community? To what extent they're in natural membranes, it's hard to...
Very hard to exaggerate, but similar structures are found in particular area, the synapse of that, so...
Just part it the other way around. In order to see a real raft, you need a living membrane. If you do something in neutral membrane, you always get macroscopic phase separation.
Yeah, the disphase separation, yeah. I mean, you can take... sphingomyelins and use an enzyme to convert to ceramides and they'll patch. So it's like I said, it's this 2D solution, but there's so many components here, and water and dehydration, electrostatics, van der Waals traction, the whole thing.
Right. And obviously in issues of real life or cell biology, what's inside here, what's in the proteins here, what's outside here must be particular structural functions associated with.
Yeah, and before people really got into these RAFs, they were like annular lipid. Again, a solvent lipid around proteins. People were talking talking in the biophysical community in the 70s and 80s about annular
mm-hmm.
visits. So there's a lot of segregation here.
So now the topic I know a little more than lipid is the plasma membrane proteins. There are many, many, many kinds of proteins you have in the plasma membrane. Ion channels. Channels are defined as pore or gated pore. When a transporter has a protein amino acid sequence that carries either flip-flop or pushes through molecules through it, so has limit, lower limit on transport efficiency in comparison to this. This primary effect is only by electrochemical gradient or potential difference. And then different kind is called receptor. Just it binds interior of the exterior for the molecule coming in. And but this binding somehow it transmits through this protein structure into the other side of the membrane. That's a receptor. Of course, we have many, many kinds of enzymes on the surface. Some digestive enzymes are also attached in the surface of this plasma membrane. And then linkers. These linkers link extracellular matrix, basal lamina outside, also inside many linker proteins, especially actin binding proteins, cause actin filaments inside. And these are the textbook classical specifications of these. But in life, for instance, many receptors work also as a linker. And part of a receptor, some of the receptors, have enzymatic activity in one part. So all these functions may be overlapping it. And especially linker proteins, many are works as a receptor, so they tell the inside that I'm holding something or not. I'm sure she's going to talk about it, but the cell knows whether cells are attached to the neighboring cells or free. And if it's free, many, many cultural cells undergo apoptosis or cell death, program cell death, because I'm free from attachment. Exception is cancer cells. They can go free. And lastly, this is a little complicated issue of immune systems called MHC proteins, major histochemical compatibility complex protein, which all your cells have these systems, with the exception of blood cells. And the cells tell the other cells, especially immune systems, that it's mine or it's not mine. Essentially, self or non-self. That's the basis of tissue rejection, for instance, in transplant and such. And structurally speaking now, all these proteins have amino acid sequence, and we'll talk about it on Thursday, take a look at it on Thursday, but has many membrane proteins called transmembrane proteins, what we call, and it spans one side of the lipid barrier to the other side. And some protein goes back and forth through these membranes. Many, many proteins have seven transmembrane domains. Some protein, even the class of protein, has 12 transmembrane domains going back and forth and back and forth. But not only this just going that complicated structure, but that makes a unique environment, the protein, while they make these transmembrane domains within. For instance, your eye, rhodopsin, has seven transmembrane domains. And inside these alpha helix of the proteins, seven domains, you have a light-sensitive molecule called retina. And that change in the retinal conformation with the light is transmitted into this protein complex. at less than in degree, some other proteins, like a porin kind of protein, has barrel kind of configuration. We call this beta barrel, made by beta series or beta sheet. These are protein, what we call secondary structure. I'm going to talk about it Tuesday a little bit. And these are primarily based on amino acid sequence. Nothing but amino acid sequence, making this coil or this sheet. Many, many other proteins, on the other hand, hang around surface or the one or the other side of this plasma membrane. Some membranes, some proteins make that and this upper helix coil are sticking just part of this plasma membrane and then hang around the membrane surface. Other proteins either hang around by another protein or via lipid tail. What we call this is called lipoproteins. So you have hydrophobic lipid tail sticking into this lipid bilayer, and protein sequence itself actually does not go into this membrane. And this is a way, in some cases, and you can cleave this here in between lipid and such. So in some circumstances, you can release this protein with respect in case for some signal transduction or some other purposes. Some weird organisms, which my friend studied, actually have a lot of these proteins. And when the cell meet the predator, they cut this. And the predator just hold this, and you can escape away from predator. Surprise, surprise. And we're gonna take a look at a little more carefully on this alpha helix and the protein structure on the transmembrane domain. But this is mainly made with about 15 to 18 amino acid sequence. And amino acid has some amino acid is hydrophobic, some are hydrophilic, and mainly you use hydrophobic amino acid to comprise this alpha helix. So it's stabilized with other hydrophobic tail of the lipid that stay in the within the membrane. And so like this. And now with thanks to all these people in mathematics, and we can do molecular genetic analysis. And this is what we call a hydropathy plot. That, you know, essentially means water, you know, resistant or hydrophobic or hydrophilic in number. We give a number. And then we plot amino acids along this. Either it's hydrophobic amino acid or hydrophilic amino acid, you number each amino acid you plot in here. And you see here almost all these external domain is neutral to hydrophilic. All of a sudden, in many, many membrane proteins, you start to see hydrophobic accumulation here. And then go back to hydrophilic. So if you have seven transmembrane alpha helices, you go back and forth like this. So nowadays, even with just with the genes only, you don't have to isolate the proteins, but to look at the genomes. And as long as you know this is a gene real for coding for protein, you can predict this may be probably a membrane protein.
And there are hydrogen bonds in the helix?
Yeah, hydrogen bond stabilizes helix.
Right, so this isn't just an oily molecule. The secondary structure comes from the hydrogen bonds as well as the ability to dissolve in the bilayer.
Right. And in essence, itself, this helix itself, you can take a look at Thursday morning, but it is essentially made with the nature of this amino acid sequence next to each other. Unless amino acid is used to disturb this naturally, amino acid sequence takes this point. And it's further stabilized by hydrogen bond.
Right. And proline breaks that structure.
Right, right. Yes, this is amino acid number, he says.
What does that actually mean?
Amino acid, actually, yes, I have to explain it. We always number amino acid from amino terminal end of the proteins to then any given single protein, you have only linearly arranged amino acid sequence. You don't have branched amino acid sequence. So you have naturally amino acid 1 to amino acid N. Depending on how many amino acids you have in that given protein. So you probe like this. And this is the nature of the proteins because how it's made.
So in the figure in the bottom left,
yeah,
or bottom right, you have a light green below meaning the
hydrophilic.
And but you also have light green above.
Yes, it's a little, this is, you
is
know, green. This
again,
is
yeah.
This is a little bit hydrophobic, so inside, even between these proteins, some proteins don't send this loop outside, not much, but there are loops coming back within these hydrophobic regions.
So the lower portion of the hydrophobic protein is hydrophobic?
This is hydrophobic, yeah.
For the top,
the upper one.
The upper one is, then the lower one is hydrophilic. We have three kinds of, roughly, amino acid. One is hydrophobic, and the other is hydrophilic charged, and the hydrophilic non-charged. Non-charged one can make hydrogen bond with water or other molecules, particular molecules. I explained to you on Thursday.
Yeah,
and
it might be good to show the side chains of the polymer.
Right, right. That time, you know, it makes it clear for you. And these are the complicated issues of these receptor proteins. And you get the signal first, insulin receptors binds insulin and transmit the signal into the cell. And cell does whole kinds of things. Gene transcription means to even cell differentiations, activations, to cell locomotion, exocytosis, endocytosis, whole kinds. Or alternatively, if cell does not see anything, in case of extracellular matrix binding protein, cell sends negative signal or some sort. And cell undergoes, as I said, undergoes apoptosis, which is programmed death. Cell says that I have left the place and I will die. And this is going to be probably talked about by Pat tomorrow. So, and this is very important issues for cancers, everything. So now a little more function of these proteins. Again, here, I want you to take a look at these numbers, efficiency. Here. And ion channel, I told you, it's a gated pore. So depending on this gradient factor, you can run almost diffusion limit, or close to, or closer than the others. Transporter makes a transport without using energy or ATP, but it has to have conformational change each time you transport the molecule in and out. Glucose. So it takes slower time. And the pump, even slower. ATP powered pump is one of the things that also makes that the ATPase, FOFI ATPase, is similar to this. And you see, it may be not 1 per second, less than 1 per second. It's slow. And the other characterization is, with regards to especially the pump or transporter is what we call unipolar, like this. These are unipolars, or unipolars. And one is called simpolars, which is, what is this? Primary molecules go through this gradient, electrochemical gradient, to go through this. And that is used to bring the molecule from high concentration, low concentration, high concentration, high and opposite concentrations. So this flow drives from this molecule against electrochemical gradient. This is called simpolar. Transporter is similar idea, but just you exchange it. This. One goes in, one goes out, or a few goes in, few goes out. Sodium, potassium, APPS, for instance. Yes.
Did you know if antibacterial peptides may behave in any one of those three mechanisms, or there are more?
Bacterial?
Antibacterial.
Antibacterial peptide is more or less not. I know the old classical case of penicillin or streptomycin. And these are inhibitors for synthesizing cell wall of the bacteria. So just to inhibit the makeup from making cell wall or cell membrane. So it's not direct inhibitors. But I know the side effects of these antibiotics, what's called antibiotics exist, and gives a pain. Probably means that there is binds to channels and such of particular minerals.
I think we're going to have a talk about these things actually very long on the previous. About these pore forming peptides.
This?
No, pore forming peptides.
Oh. A little bit of that is a little bit out of my scopes, but there.
But what size of molecules, ions, are transported, and what's the limit in scale for this? We see ions move, you said maybe.
Nucleotide, sugar, pentose, hexose, and individual peptide can go through it. And beyond that, it's a little controversial. Some people believe that the oligopeptide, means few amino acids still linked to each other, could go through this.
Mm-hmm.
And the other people say that the other mechanism, membrane bound, the vesicle bound carrier,
right,
brings through the cell. And for instance, in case of the prions is pretty big. That's, now we're talking about this BSE problems. And prion appear to go through the cells.
Mm-hmm.
And it's big, but we don't know how it goes through.
But these kind of transporters are ions, it's just salt and sugar.
Salt, sugar, yes, amino acids, mainly restricted that much.
I had a kind of naive question.
Yes.
So I'm trying to picture how this all gets into place. So these various proteins, the the transmembrane proteins,
yes,
they're produced within the cell.
Right.
Now, kind of, we're thinking of the simplest ones. They're hydrophilic at each end and hydrophobic in the middle. They come up and they encounter this layer that's hydrophilic in that hydrophobic. How would they penetrate that? It would seem like they would just kind of bounce
okay,
off.
Okay, how the hell they insert this in? Yes, and the correct order, yes. That's a good question. And all right, I wasn't going to talk about it in Thursday, but I'm going to show you how
okay,
in a few slides. And here, many tricks that they have, cell has to insert this protein in correct orders.
But doesn't it go back to the ribosome? It goes back to how they're made initially.
Right. When it's made, it's already
in the membrane.
Oh, it's made in the membrane.
Right.
There's a leader sequence, and that goes through, but it just might bump into the plasma membrane and then get incorporated. It's already there in these vesicles.
Ah, okay, so then that was actually a more intelligent question than I thought it was going to be.
It's a very good
And the other cases,
there are no naive questions.
Right. And the other cases, like mitochondrial protein, are made in cytoplasm free, but has this special mechanisms put into, and inside some cases inside into the membrane after that, or go through two membrane systems going to inside. Okay, I'm gonna show you that slide to explain quickly in Thursday. It's more confusing than anything, so I thought I was chicken to go into the detail much better.
No, that's good.
Okay. That's in Thursday, protein synthesis and export pathways. Yes. That's a little more my bread and butter issues, topic stuff. And very important part of this is sodium potassium ATPase pump. That energizes many things to establish sodium potassium gradient. That establishes membrane potentials. That establishes activity of the neurons and everything. And with using ATP hydrolysis, and they bring three sodiums to two potassiums, one way or the other. So you always have sodium outside, and channels and the other systems bring the sodium in. So you want to get rid of the sodiums all the time. So this pump always working, and to bring the sodium out. At the same token, you lose the potassium with any action potentials, any leaky channels. So you want to bring the potassium in to maintain 100 millimolar or so. So you always run this system with ATPs to establish membrane potentials. This is very important, key activities of any living cells. And why? Because, for instance, here, glucose is co-transported, it's simple or co-transported with sodium gradient. Amino acids as well. And the channels, of course, you change membrane potentials, making action potentials and such, making this. And also, you always want to get rid of calcium. And one of the ways is these exchanges. So, for many, many reasons, sodium gradient is very important. A lot of outside, inside, to drive all these systems. And to maintain that, you really have to run this sodium potassium ATPase backward. So, another thing here is this. In real life, this is sodium potassium ATPase I was talking about. To bring this glucose, you have to run this from outside here this way. This is true with many systems to, for instance, to establish your acidic stomach juice is established in a way, it's a similar mechanism. Or bring it on, take care of all these ions concentrations and all these kidney tubules and such. Also, more or less works like this. So maintaining this is very essential for any cell living. So that's pretty much the basis of this. Of course, there are millions and millions of different membrane proteins.
Can I just make one point for the audience? If you go back to that slide there. The thing that's hidden in all these slides is there's no forces. And that's what I was talking about. You know, how nervous are we about just seeing these pictures? And the phosphate is a charged molecule.
Right.
So this ATP, ADP, adding a phosphate and taking a phosphate away, it's all about putting the charge strategically on a molecule. That charge brings a force. That force has an action. And the biologists are very happy to put ATP, ADP, PI. But if you really want to understand the mechanism, now we have to understand the forces at these strategic points in the molecules.
Right. Phosphate. Have your phosphate from this nucleotide. Has very big change in adding or removing, a very big change in a free potential, gives a free potential, energy potential.
Yeah, and so if we just take some very simple language here, a charge adds a force causes a conformational change,
right.
Well, in a mechanical sense, a force causes a strain, and a force causes a strain or a stress causes a strain, there has to be an elasticity and possibly a viscosity associated with that strain. And so now we're really talking about material properties of materials, not just, you know, molecules.
Yes.
So that's hidden in all of it.
So really we're not talking just about a pressure grain itself, for example. Transfer glucose from one side to another is not just the pressure grain, but actually is an activation process. Is that what we're talking about?
In a way, yes and no. Its gradient varies greatly in your intestine contents. And sometimes this is very low, even lower than here. But you still have to bring this glucose against gradient. You for sake of rest of your body. So you bring it, and then once you bring it, and then you release into your blood cytoplasm. And even unless you have zero sugar, almost any sugar amount they want to take out from inside. So it's against gradient. Numbers of molecules.
No, number of channels and pumps per cell.
This? Two sodium per glucose or such?
Yeah.
There are only three glucose transporters, main types known. And one is this two sodium process, this, and the other is this GLUC2, which is just a free transporter carrier. And the other type is also more like this, I believe. So not many varieties of glucose transporters actually. And this is especially evident in the intestine apical surface membranes. And most of your surface has these kind of glucose transporters. And
but
this one can be
density depends on cell type. So if you have a brain cell it would have very, very little glucose transporters.
No, you have glucose transporters bring the glucose in like this. This could be both ways, channels. So if you have low glucose here, bring into that.
From one way to detect brain activity is to detect glucose. So glucose is used in,
positive electron tomography that we use a modified glucose, fluoride version of glucose, specialized glucose. That, by the way, PET is developed by the professor here in New Zealand.
Michael Perper.
Yeah. That uses glucose. And any active cells, brain cells, cancer cells also, metabolism is very high. That's why you use this glucose metabolism to monitor where the activities are and where it's supposed not to be, as you see, probably it's cancer. So glucose transporters are everywhere, but this is special even against glucose concentration difference. It brings glucose into. Other cells, there are more glucose here than here, so naturally glucose are following the potential gradient. Yes, by the way, yes. You learned all this glycolysis and such, and this is limiting step. This is limiting step of the two steps, actually, main steps of glycolysis, of this biochemistry. I know you all learned it, and a second after the exam, you all forget. However, most of the cells, the rate-limiting factor is glucose transport. That's real life, biochemistry. And let me change our topic a little bit. Now, it's adhesions of cells. And there are many, many kinds of adhesions that most of the cells have. And here, basically, you have is cell material adhesions based on an extracellular matrix or something, or cell-to-cell adhesions. Other way of seeing is mechanical adhesions. These adhesions maintain mechanical strength of the attachment between cells. When there's gap junction, is just a pore. This is like a channel in between cells, so some molecules can go or the others. And like lastly, this is tight junction. This is also called occluding junctions, and separate from this apical surface, but basal lateral surface. We are running out of the time, and we still have few things to go, and I just stop a little bit further this, but let me do 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
And occluding junction is very important here to separate two halves. For instance, glucose cannot go through this. And this is an experiment that the experimental in demonstration that you put a dye, colored dye, the one side or the other side of the cells, like this. In this case, it's like this, from apical side. And color penetrated through this, but stopped by this tight junctions or occluding junctions here. If you put the color from this side, it comes up to here, but stops here. Means most of the molecule, charged molecule, we believe most of the molecule, are stopped at these tight junctions. Water can go through, sometimes some, depending on the cell types, but some molecule miraculously go through this. Always somebody is cheating doing that way. But this is like your ziplock of the bag to separate two halves.
So what is the topic? Come on, let's go.
Okay, yes, it's going to be coming here. And tight junction actually is, if you take a look at the actual micrograph, it's like a chicken wire kind of network of the protein strands embedded in the membrane. And we now know, we named it there, there are two proteins, protein and occluded. And the same protein coming from both sides and facing to each other and make this chicken work. We know this much and molecular biology or protein basis, and we know this structure and look like this, but how actually this makes this night chicken wire structure is still up under the air. But you make this so molecules cannot go through this. This, you see the side of the membrane from here, and here's a tight junction. And interesting on tight junction is, not only separates two outside, but it limits the proteins to diffuse from apical side of the membrane to basal lateral side of the membrane. Many proteins can move in between these lipid bilayer almost free, said to be almost free in this area, but stopped by this tight junction. Opposite is true with this. So this makes really two membrane functions separate each other. Another one here is called an anchoring it, and one is called adherence junctions, right just underneath these tight junctions. And the other type of molecule we call cadherin. From both sides of cells, make connections. And these are mechanical strength attachment. Also, some signal transduction takes place here, with some cadherin. But mainly, these are mechanical connections. And this binding of this, well, to some extent with this tight junction also. It requires calcium ions here. Without calcium ions, these proteins don't work that well, and also very, very sensitive to proteins. Some of you have, I know that there is the tissue engineering, and to establish that tissue, primary culture tissue from the real tissue, you add EDTA and proteins. EDTA kills calcium, and also makes these proteins more sensitive to proteins. That's how you can break down the cells to individual. But cells, after you play it out to the culture plate, they make this, and naturally, they come together. Also true with cadherin junction is called desmosomes. Desmosomes, unlike these adherin junction, this is called like a belt around the cell, the particular level. This is a spot, a plaque. And you can see this, this is one cell here. And inside the cell, you have this red fiber, this is keratin fibers. And going to the desmosome here, and now going to the next cell, to attach to the keratin fibers. That makes you to, this is as if you watch your epithelium from top. That's how you make the strength of the epithelium. You hold this body outside.
What's the next scale there?
This is few microns. But also desmosome works in cardiac muscle cells. Unlike skeletal muscle cells, cardiac muscles, your heart muscle cells, are small, individual. But they have to attach, of course, very, very strongly to make make up the wall and make the pumping of the heart. So mechanically, muscle cells are attached to each other by these desmosomes. And you see like dark bands here because there's so many desmosomes here in between two muscle cells. So they really physically attach tightly. And again, this is cadherin. But this time, a lot of different subspecies of cadherin is used. And also have this plate, cytoplasmic plaque or plate, where cadherin goes into. And this keratin filament goes the other side of this plate, inside the cell, the both sides here. And you can see this in the electromicrograph. It's one cell here, the other cell here, and this is this desmosome. And these filaments, keratin filaments, goes into. So these are molecules called cadherin, and the cad coming from calcium. The other type of the adhesion molecule is what we call integrin. Unlike cadherin binds other cadherin, cell to cell. Integrin binds something else, extracellular matrix protein and such, or basal lamina. And the main important things on the integrin is not only they bind, but they send the signal inside. And also they bind inside filament. Why it's important, one thing is, they tell you that they are adheres to something else. For instance, this is muscle of integrin systems, and the inside integrin here, it's what we call protein binding actin, thin filament of muscles to this system is called dystrophin. And this dystrophin mutation, single gene mutation with dystrophin, makes a major type of muscle dystrophy. That this name came from that. So this attachment is very important. In this case, mechanical change in here in muscle, myosin active is transmitted through this in lateral side of cells into basal lamina. And when this is broken, this connection is broken and cell starts to tear apart by itself with muscle contraction. That's what muscle dystrophy is.
Do you know what the certain amino acid changes are in that molecule yet?
Yes, I know that they know.
Okay, then you know they know.
Right. That's why we can do people trying the gene therapies.
Right.
So, looking at the outside to the cell membrane, there are extracellular matrix of these other proteins, collagen, laminin, and integrin trap, you see, sticking the face from membrane, attach all these. And not only this, many other signals, external signals, tells integrin to either bind or not. This is important to maintain the tissues, maintain the cell-cell communications, but also very important on facing this type of cells, another type of cells, during development, to develop the new tissues or organs. And we believe that this principle is the key of the development of the different systems and such, or differentiations. Lastly, here's a poem called Gap Junction. Cell makes these four proteins assemble into, and somehow they come to each other, to face each other. It's called connexin, and this structure is called connexon. And some molecules can go through these four, some others, depending on the size, depending on the charge. And so cell to cell can communicate, exchange information, like inositol phosphate, some cells go through epithelial cells. Calcium goes through the other type of gap junctions. And cell, without any connections, always cells talking to each other within tissues. Also, this is important for development, tissue development as well. And these are these adhesion molecules. And these are the, now it's more focused on tissue engineering people. So, and the final part I prepared is electrical properties of plasma membrane. That we are running out of time, so I'm going very quick. And key essence is this, again, potassium and sodium gradient difference. That develops this membrane potential, and you can make equivalent electric circuit with capacitors, resistors, and the batteries. And the resting time, you have a lot of sodium outside, a lot of potassium inside, and the potassium is leaky, so you get about 70 millivolt negative inside of the cells if you stick the two electrodes and then establish a circuit, electric circuit like this, and measure this. And important thing is, for instance here, blood plasma or interstitial fluid, there are a lot of sodium, not much inside. Opposite is true with potassium. And for instance here, chloride, a counteracting negative ions, is a lot in the outside, almost none inside. But as he said, phosphate, very important function, phosphate, and the proteins, negative charge contribution inside the cell. That brings up the discharge. And then you perturb the discharge by opening this gate or channel to drive sodium or calcium or other way around. Potassium is always leaky. There are gated potassium channels, important potassium channels, but potassium is always leaky. That's why you have to always run in the pump, because you always bring the sodium for many, many reasons. And this is important things for engineers. Unlike wire, metal wire, copper wire, this change in, for instance, you poke it, you can change this with an opening it or closing the channels. But it's a very local and does not spread readily nor in distance. So it decays. This potential change is purely ion exchange concentration dependent, so it's not like an electron going through the wire. It's limitations. So it decays. So that's a problem, number one. But you can, in turn, you can localize that changes. And you can make this change by adding many, many, many different channels or many number of channels over the process. So you can make gradient potentials. A little bit change in this side, what we call depolarization, or a little bit deeper change, what we call hyperpolarization. And we can shift this, regulating this, by flow of the a little bit of ions inside, outside. This is all, you know, electrophysiology and the neuroscience. And if you need more, you really have to go through this, the specialized lectures and such. But this is just essence. But only in neurons, what happens, or only particular cells or muscle cells, there are another type of the channels called voltage-dependent calcium channels or voltage-gated calcium sodium channel, which opens with change in the voltage. So you make this graded potential change, and this change hits the threshold or ionic flow is a lot. Now all of a sudden, a bunch of these voltage-gated sodium channel opens, and it changes this voltage dramatically. Now it's overshoots like this in comparison to this change fluctuations. That's what we call action potential. And action potential, it comprises with the two components. One, the first component is sodium change coming into the cell. But when this side change, potassium change channel opens, and then counteracting this sodium electrical potential to bring it down. And then sodium channel closes, but potassium channel keep open, so you have a little hyperpolarization overshoot here. This is one unit of what is called action potential happening in neuron axons and muscles. And it only happens in the, this is the part going back to this membrane issues and such. Only happened here. This generation of this action potential only takes place only the very limited area of this plasma membrane in neurons. What we call trigger zone, here or here or here. And then, interestingly, action potential only goes one way, only limited, restricted distance, directions. All the others don't see action potentials. This area continuously changing this gradient potentials. So you have analog comparator, if you're an electric engineer. You have analog comparators, many inputs, to fluctuate this input. And then when this input is enough, this area is changing this analog signal, the digital signal, all on that action potential to transmit it. And obviously this goes to down to axon terminal, which is synapse, and going down to downstream neurons. So you have a lot of these input signals to decide yes or no. Finally, this area decides yes or no to convert these analog signals into digital signals. That's what neuron does. And why it doesn't go back then? Because also it's a secret of these channels. After these channels are open, there's a refractory period of this channel, which cannot open it. So this area sends the voltage gated channel to sense, for instance, and they open it, and then make the sodium influx. So that potential which fell both sides, actually, but this gated channel on this side is already opened beforehand, so they cannot open it for a while. Whereas these channels are seeing that yet. So they start to open it. So action potential gradually move only one way. Time delays, that's a very clever system, they're making it this way. That's why you can transmit this. And two things I want you to take a look at carefully. Timing of this movement along the distance is slow. It's not like electric wire. In milliseconds, takes milliseconds to move a few microns. But height of this action potential, while it's moving, it remains the same. That's why I said this is digital signal, all or none. And it's a sharp all or none, one signal or not. And problem is, your body is big, and you cannot wait to transmit the signal from here to here. So cell makes some neurons, especially motor neurons, which commands your muscles and such, have insulations, the special systems called myelin. And that essentially is wrapped around the myelin membrane, cells of myelinated cells, called Schwann cells. These are plasma membrane stuff. And that's hydrophobic mostly. So you make a very good insulation in this area of axon. And what happened is, and then here you can see, now this change in the voltage jumping from one side, the other side of this myelin. And once in a while, I don't remember exact length of this, you have this free area called non-dominant BA. And this is area membrane still active of this axon membrane. So it can jump here and here. So either you're walking or hopping. So that's why you can make a little faster transmission. Here you have this, all this dark color is myelin here, electron micrograph here. Whereas here is non-dominant BA. It's just axons running through here. And some neurons don't have it, small sensory neurons. Many of the brain neurons don't have this. And yet this Schwann cell gives the nurturing of this, all these neurons and such. But only some neurons, but the big neurons have this myelin sheath. Here's the Schwann cell making this myelin sheath axons here. So here's the difference. With the cell with axon with myelin sheath, can go this much, whereas without moving it slow. But you can make small neurons compact, so if you have sort of neural network, small area, and neurons that long, then brain, some of the brain area, you don't need this myelin sheath. Just very short distance, so you want to make more neurons than in these extra structures. So you have both systems in your body. That's pretty much what membrane does. Transport, electrical properties, and adhesions. That's the three key areas.